Thanks for listening to this podcast of Faith Radio Mornings from Faith Radio. Good morning, everyone. It's the 26th of September, and welcome to Faith Radio Mornings, where we'll talk about important news and topics of the day with trusted voices from around our country. Maybe have some different angles on the news, some conservative, some more liberal, but all of it will be from a Christian perspective. And we'll do so with honesty and with faith and with a real hope each morning that only comes because that tomb is empty, and we serve the living King of the only kingdom that knows no end. I am your host for the show, Dr. Peter Kapsner, joined in studio by Logan Roush, oftentimes Rachel Sutton as well, who do a great job running the sound and the board and getting the guests booked each morning that just bring us a variety of perspectives and wisdom from a kingdom standpoint. And of course, Paul Perreault in the newsroom, who has stacks of news for me every morning to sort through that we can talk about, again, from a Christian perspective. And we certainly love hearing from you as well. It's not just about us, but you as listeners. And so when you call and text in, as you often do, we so appreciate you engaging in the conversation. You can do so anytime at 877-933-2484. Again, call or text at any time, 877-93-FAITH. Loved our first hour of the show with Harvest Prude, who's a journalist for World Magazine, and the inside of the courtroom, or the hearing room proceedings and the court drama of the Supreme Court, as well as Dr. Kent Kaiser. And of course, after Kent, every Wednesday, I'm joined in studio by Bill English, the longest running guest on Faith Radio Mornings. And Bill writes a lot for his website, BibleandBusiness.com, does a lot of work, I know, consulting with his Platinum Group, and helps businesses of all size in different stages of their journey and development. Good morning, Bill. It's great to have you in studio, as always.
Well, that was great. You should join the marketing team at Platinum.
Really? You know, if you made me a good offer, I'd probably, this would be my last day on Faith Radio.
You know, $4.50 an hour is what we're paying now.
Okay, I think I'm going to stick with the radio show, Bill. Yeah. So we talked a little bit, actually, in the first hour from different angles about this kind of fun news, but it actually has some serious implications, I think, for businesses out there, that Dunkin' Donuts has dropped the donuts part of their name as they're rebranding themselves. I'm sure in your journey as a business person, Bill, that you've seen companies decide if they're going to rebrand themselves. What are some reasons why a company might? It seems like Dunkin' Donuts wants to focus more on high profitable, high margin coffee business, and so they don't want to be associated only with donuts anymore. But what are some reasons companies might rebrand themselves?
Well, their brand gets stale. The product line gets stale. It gets old. Out of date. People grow tired of it, and so they have to come up with a new product line, new service lines, and as a result, new brands.
Do you ever talk with business people at all in terms of just saying, hey, you really should think about, after you've done your analysis and assessment, do you say maybe you should change the way you're presenting
only
yourself?
Only one here in the Twin Cities in the 5 years I've been at Platinum. I've only recommended that they do a brand change on one customer, and it made a lot of sense to me, and it didn't make any sense to them. So, you know.
Well, and I know we were talking off air, and we'll do this after the break here in just a moment, get into sometimes how churches will change their name, and it seems to be a growing trend, obviously, over the last 10 years that we're dropping denominations from our names or trying to become supposedly more relevant. So why don't we take a short break? But when we come back from break, let's get into that more, because I'm sure listeners have experienced life in their own church community with these conversations. So much more to come here with Bill English of BibleandBusiness.com on Faith Radio Mornings. It's 9 minutes past the hour here on Faith Radio Mornings. I'm your host, Dr. Peter Kapsner, joined in studio by Bill English of BibleandBusiness.com. And Bill, just before the break, we were talking a little bit about companies that change their brand, change their name. Maybe it's because they've gotten stale with it or they want to create a new perception. But this isn't just for secular businesses. We see a movement in churches over the last maybe 10, 15, 20 years really making some significant name changes.
Yeah, and they're dropping the denomination is mainly what they're doing. A lot of them still are associated with denominations. denominations, but they're dropping the denominational name. And I wonder about that. I wonder about the distinctives that are being lost in these name changes. But you're a practical theology guy. What do you think?
Well, the whole chair shifted this morning, Bill. It's a good question. You know, I think part of how we can process these things is to recognize that denominations on the world history scene are still relatively young. I mean, when we're talking just a few hundred years here, that we've seen so many different splits. And I think if you go into the origin of why a denomination developed, sometimes it seemed really rightly ordered because there was corruption and abuse maybe happening, and so there needed to be a break from that. But when you're talking about 600 different denominations in the Minneapolis-St. Paul area alone, so many of those splits and breaks, I think so many of us that have been part of the church community and love the church, love the bride, also have experienced some of the difficult dimensions of power and gossip and some of the splits that have come maybe because of the way worship is being done. Maybe somebody liked more expositional preaching versus topical. It's hardly ever a real distinct theological idea that leads to a new denomination that needs to sort of be clarified. And so maybe some of the dropping of the denominational names represents an idea that at least we want to try to be united in this, recognizing that there is some really wonky ideas as well.
Yeah, you know, if you were to line up the statement of faiths of, say, the Christian Missionary Alliance, the Evangelical Free Church, maybe even the United Methodists and the Baptists, at least some of the Baptists, you would find their statement of faiths are nearly identical.
They really are.
They're very, very close.
Yeah, I think one of the more compelling conversations that's happening across a variety of denominations that I assume is impacting a lot of our listeners has to do with same-gender marriage right now and the affirming of same-gender
couples. That is a watershed issue.
Yeah, that really is the one that's causing. I think when we look back in history 100 years from now, you know, I read history books in my classes about these conversations that seem like they're these dusty pages of history, but they were probably incredibly divisive in the time. I think we're going to look back in history 100 years from now and see that related to the same-gender issue.
Yeah, and the same-sex marriage, gay marriage, however you want to call it, to me that is a watershed issue.
It really is.
As to whether you're staying faithful to the scriptures or not. And I know that just by saying that, I've offended a number of people.
Absolutely.
But the clear exegetical interpretation of the scriptures, just the plain reading of the scriptures, I just don't see how you can come up with gay marriage as something that is approved by God.
Well, and of course, that conversation on sexuality is one of the most prevalent in our culture today. So much confusion. You know, I teach a class on that, and we have about 14 weeks of class, and a full 3 or 4 weeks is devoted to trying to understand the same gender conversation from a variety of angles. But that also brings up, it's not just same gender conversation. We're seeing so much of the abuse conversations coming up.
Yes.
From people in power. We've seen it in the headlines of the Catholic Church that there seems to be a lot of light being shed from the last 30, 40, 50, or even longer years of young boys being abused primarily. We've seen the abuse of power in the Protestant Church among a variety of big-name pastors. Bill, how are you processing all of this just organizationally and even just some of what I know you would suggest is a bit of hypocrisy about why some of these abuse situations get a lot of attention and others get swept under the rug?
Well, I think we pay attention to three things when it comes to these what I'll call public abuse situations. And I think three things really seem to affect how we view them. Number one is our politics, what we believe politically. Number two, it's the context in which the allegations are made. And number three, it's our gender. Mm-hmm. Are you a male or female?
Yeah.
And you don't get to choose beyond that, you know, in terms of male or female. So for the politics, so much of our life is political now. You can't watch a sporting event now without having a political discussion ambient to the event, right?
Right.
You can't have a victim come up and say, this person abused me a long time ago, without it being interpreted as a political event if it's made within a political context to begin with. And so it just seems to me that those three things impact how we view these sexual abuse allegations. And these things are really difficult for our country to process. We do not process them well. We do not provide a context to discuss them well. And we tend to move straight to the politics and ulterior motives on both sides.
Well, and it sure seems like when it is in the political sphere, it really, whether it gets swept under the rug or brought to attention, has to do with which side of the aisle is bringing the accusation. So you look at how many accusations of President Clinton were sort of swept under the rug by the Democratic Party while the Republicans were crying foul. But the Democrats, of course, had wanted Clinton in power. And so we'll kind of just sweep these things under the rug. And now we're experiencing the reverse a bit with the Judge Kavanaugh proceedings, where the Republicans are trying to walk through the optics of the situation. But clearly they want their guy in power, while now the Democrats are crying foul because they're on the flip side of the power dynamic. So it is, there isn't a consistent message, certainly within our political sphere, around the importance of this conversation.
And that leads to people being very jaded, very, very jaded about who really is in this for the right reasons. You know, Republicans elected Donald Trump. 80% of evangelical Christians voted for this guy, right? And he was clearly, with his own words, a sexual abuser. And there's no way around that. The way that he described women and how he would grab their genitalia and force himself on them, that is clearly a predator there, right? So Bill Clinton, Donald Trump, and you find evangelical Christians on both sides of the aisles voting for their guy,
yep,
and looking the other way. I don't think God is happy.
Well, I think that's a really astute point, Bill. I remember that evangelical Christians certainly were trying to railroad President Clinton out of office for the same kinds of allegations that have been made against President Trump. But again, because Trump is maybe for some people their guy in terms of a policy standpoint, saying we really want the tax cuts, we really want Supreme Court justice, there's sort of this holding of the nose about these allegations. It is really tricky to walk through all of this when it comes to people in power.
And we continue to think as Christians that if we vote right and if we get involved, and I'm not downing us voting and getting involved, that we can somehow turn this country around. But 2 Chronicles 7:14 is very clear. If we as Christians simply live righteously before God, that he will heal our land. He will supernaturally bring this country around. Mm. But so many of us don't live righteously. We have private sin. We do things and we say things that are really contrary to where the scriptures are at and where God's heart is at. And since we don't live those things out in this society, we have some of the problems we have. I really believe that the core problems in our society are not political. They are spiritual.
Hmm.
And if the evangelical church were to ever figure this out, I think we could make huge inroads into changing this culture. Maybe not into a Republican culture or a Democratic culture, but into a godly culture.
Yeah, let's get into that more, Bill, after the break, because one of the reasons why I love having you on the show is when we talk about it from a business standpoint, you don't have a divide between the business world and our spiritual world. We are Christian people walking out life in the business world, and I would love to get your take on what it means to have our allegiance to the kingdom of heaven as we're trying to deal with the temporary political scene of the day. So more to come with Bill English here on Faith Radio Mornings. Welcome back to Faith Radio Mornings. I'm your host, Peter Kapsner, and always delighted to be joined in studio by Bill English of BibleandBusiness.com. It's always an engaging conversation. And Bill, we've been talking just a lot about sort of the hypocrisy of sexual abuse in our country, and specifically that when it's a Democrat that's in power, the Republicans are always crying foul, you know, as loud as they can. And when it's a Republican in power, the Democrats are crying foul versus sweeping it under the rug. You know, you've had an interesting journey, too, just in terms of working in the political sphere during the course of your life. And tell our listeners a little bit about your processing for this.
You know, I was actually pretty active in the Republican Party for a while back in the early to mid 90s. I was a deputy chair for one of the BPOUs. I was part of the state central committee for the Republican Party, and I worked on a number of senator and gubernatorial campaigns. I really lost faith in the Republican Party when they became in power at the federal level, and they started spending just like the Democrats did. And what I realized is that people in power spend money to stay in power, to keep their constituents happy. And so I think I'm still registered as a Republican, but for all intensive purposes, I don't see much difference between the two. I just think the Republicans are Democrat light, and the Democrats are very close to being socialists anymore.
Yeah.
And so, at least to my way of thinking.
So I'm fascinated. So because you didn't, when you talked about how you became a little disillusioned with the Republican Party, it's not like you swung then to the Democratic side of things.
No,
you just
I didn't.
Sort of removed yourself altogether from an allegiance standpoint.
I am a free market, limited government guy. I think the government that governs least governs best. I don't think you help the employee by hurting the employer. There's a lot of things that I continue to believe, but I don't think the Republican Party represents my beliefs that much anymore. And I can hear a number of people right now in their cars or at home going, wait a minute, you don't understand the Republican Party. And well, no, I do think I understand the Republican Party. You know, you just look at the blast spending bills that they passed at the federal level and tell me that they're conservative, limited government people. They're not. Look at Donald Trump. He is not a conservative. He portrays himself as one, but he's not. He's at best a moderate. I've really, more and more, I've been heading towards the libertarian area where it's just, you know, keep the government out of the bedroom and keep the government out of the boardroom. And that's kind of where my head's been going.
Yeah, it's fascinating. And it doesn't mean, as you're talking about maybe sort of shifting allegiance a little bit from the Republican Party, that there aren't platforms within either party that as a Christian you would want to support. That's not about that, but it is about recognizing that it's pretty tough to give your full allegiance to one political party or another when really our allegiance is to the kingdom of God.
Yeah, the kingdom of God, the gospel of Jesus Christ doesn't fit neatly into either the Democrat or the Republican Party. I'm sorry, but for all those Christians who think the Republicans are always right and Democrats are always wrong, I disagree with you. It just seems to me that people on the left, Christians on the left, confuse the work of the kingdom with the work of the government. And so we should do things to help the poor by the redistribution of wealth if they're looking at it from a political perspective. But to my way of thinking, that's something that the church ought to be doing, not the government. From the people on the right, it just seems to me that the church ought to be looking at ways to improve the lives of their people and not necessarily depend on just pulling yourself up by your own bootstraps kind of mentality that Republicans often have. So it just seems to me that a Christian living out their lives will find parts of the Democrat and parts of the Republican platforms, as you said, that they would like, but there's a lot not to like there too. We should be allegiance first to Jesus Christ, and then, yeah, okay, let's grab the politics and run with it. But I think the original framers intended factions, not parties. I think they thought that, you know, you're with me on this issue, but you're against me on this other issue, right? It's factions is what I think that they had intended the Congress to have, not political parties.
Hey, that's well said. It's sort of become an all-out war for power at this point where there isn't that conversation anymore around what where we agree and disagree. And we have a text from the listener, Bill. Actually, it's relevant to the conversation too, that says, how is running the local church different from running a business in terms of principles and practices that are most likely to bring success to achieving vision and ministry? Because the church can so often be run like a business and have the same principles maybe of a business, but it's a different outcome at the end of the day we as believers are attending to in our faith that isn't just the success of the church from a business standpoint.
You know, I get that question sometimes. To my way of thinking, the business side of any ministry is run like a business because that's what it is. You still have to cash flow. You have to pay your debts. You have to follow the laws of the country that you're in. And that includes employment laws. That includes equal opportunity laws and stuff like that. But in terms of what the church is here to do, what's the core purpose of the church? Seems to me it's always two things, is to worship God and evangelize the lost. And so that's what we do, and there's going to be a heavy spiritual component in terms of spiritual warfare as Satan opposes us. But in terms of the actual day-to-day operations, I don't see a problem running it like a business.
So if I asked you from a church standpoint that should a church go down to the state capitol, for example, if there's some sort of public policy conversation that a church feels like they are against, should they go down and picket and try to change the public policy? I know, boy, I've been in church for a lot of years, and I hear both sides of it, that politics should stay out of the church or that the church should be far more engaged in the political sphere. How have you approached that question over the years, Bill?
You know, I think that the church should be calling both sides to righteousness and asking God to transform hearts and lives, because that's what God does. He transforms us, right? And as God transforms us, he transforms our thinking, and we start to love what he loves and hate what he hates. And then we let people move out as the Spirit of God energizes them. Should the church get involved in specific policy issues? I have a hard time with that. To me, people, Christians, ought to be involved in specific policy issues, but not the organized church.
It's Bill English of BibleandBusiness.com. Bill, we just have about a minute left in our segment. They always go so quickly on this. And I'd just be curious on one last thought, that if you were a Christian thinking about, gosh, I want to stay engaged with the political process, and maybe not my church, but I want to stay engaged on some level, it's a little bit like being a Christian business person. You really are bringing those Christian principles to bear in the political sphere.
You are. And so pray through what you would have God have you do. Right. And ask God, what should I be involved in? And don't necessarily think it's a political party. You may want to get involved in a cause or a nonprofit. For example, you may want to get involved in the sex traffic industry, which, to my way of thinking, is modern day slavery.
Yeah.
We have slavery in this country. We can get rid of it if Christians get involved in it. And so, maybe pick one or two causes and get involved in those. If you do choose to get involved in a political party, you are going to have a difficult road to hoe, if you ask me. And so just make sure that you're walking closely with the Lord.
Yeah, to your point, people using money to gain power in the political sphere, that's pretty tough to live a different way as a believer in that
sphere. You cannot get, it's power and money are so intoxicating in politics. And when everybody's cheering for you after you've just been elected, boy, oh boy, you better be walking close with the Lord. That's all I can say.
Yeah, the applause of people, boy, that does cause the fall of a lot. Well, Bill, thanks for joining us so much here on Faith Radio Mornings. Love the segment. BibleandBusiness.com if you want to check out more of Bill's work, and you can see some contact information as he's very accessible to you as listeners with your questions about the Bible and business. We'll take a break for Breakpoint and Bottom of the Hour News. And in the second half of this hour, I'll be joined by Jeremiah Johnston, who has a new program here on Faith Radio, and we'll talk about a number of different theological issues. So lots more to come on Faith Radio. Radio Mornings. That's great and inspiring and really important moments at our schools across the country today, as it is See You at the Poll morning, where there's prayer rallies around our country that students are hosting and volunteering and leading, praying for all things around our country. It's such an inspiring event. It started in about 1990, grassroots movement, and with 10 students praying at their schools, and now there's millions of students this morning participating on their campuses on the fourth Wednesday of September. So if you're out there listening this morning, pray for our students, pray for our young people, and just maybe throw up a prayer of gratefulness that they are tending their hearts to God this morning. Yesterday on Faith Radio Mornings, we were joined by Dr. Rosemary Stein, and she was talking about, though it might be difficult, the importance of letting our kids make mistakes.
We also had the kind of experiences where we lost a key, and Mom had to come in after work, maybe, and see us on the stoop. And we had to say, I'm sorry, and you had to cry, because you were not responsible with something that she had given you. Those things really formed you. They made it so that you knew where to put the key from there on out. It was the falling, the mistake that you might have made as a kid that made it so that you understood how to handle yourself. But we're not letting our children make mistakes because we are, in a sense, overprotecting them. But we don't do this just as parents. We're doing it as a society. So I would say that take a step back and look where you're able to take some risk. Don't go all out and make it so that you're putting your child in peril, but you need to be able to make a small risk that your child's going to be able to take. And you tell your kids, you prepare your child beforehand and say, these are the things that might happen. And, if some of these things happen, it's okay. We'll talk about it and we'll go over how you can protect yourself.
Fascinating conversation with Dr. Stein yesterday. She was bringing up the idea of free-range children as well. Highly recommend listening to that segment if you're a parent or grandparent. And you can go to myfaithradio.com and check out the podcast from yesterday, or search for Dr. Rosemary Stein, and you'll see that entire segment is available. Well, I know Jeremiah Johnston is already on the line here for Faith Radio Mornings. Very excited for that conversation. Jeremiah and I can talk about anything from a theological standpoint. And we're also excited to ask Jeremiah about the great news that In-N-Out Burgers are coming to Houston, Texas, to his neck of the woods. So we'll talk with Jeremiah next on Faith Radio Mornings.
Most parents who demand perfection don't realize it's the very cause for the huge dent in their relationship. Hi, I'm Mark Gregston with Parenting Today's Teens. I once heard a kid say, "It's funny to me that we had the most messed up family in our whole neighborhood, and our yard was prettier than everyone else's. I think it was my parents' way of pretending that we had it all together." Here's a helpful tip. Give permission to your kids to be imperfect, flawed. Your teen will relate and respect you when they see you having both wisdom and imperfection. And they will feel a sense of connection with you, knowing that you aren't validated by what they do, but by who they are. That dent in your relationship will disappear as you let go of perfectionism. Relax. Nobody's perfect.
Want to hear Mark in person? For a list of upcoming events, go to ParentingTodaysTeens.org.
It's about 20 minutes before the top of the hour here on Faith Radio Mornings. I am your host, Dr. Peter Kapsner, and delighted to be joined on the line by friend and fellow co-host of a program here on Faith Radio Mornings that airs on Saturdays. It's the Jeremiah Johnston Show, in which Jeremiah takes questions from listeners around the country, some of those troubling questions that we have a hard time knowing how to process. Good morning, Jeremiah.
Good morning, Peter. Good to hear your voice.
Well, yours too as well, and I know that what's top of the mind for you as you're trying to deal with all these theological issues is you still got to eat from time to time, and you're quite excited about the idea of In-N-Out Burgers coming to your neck of the woods in Houston, Texas.
We are. I'm sorry to say. I mean, it's a big deal. It's a really big deal. And if anyone's ever been to In-N-Out Burger, you know why. It's in Dallas. It's in San Antonio. But just recently did they announce they're coming to Houston, Texas. So we're excited to have In-N-Out Burger in H-Town. And it is somewhat controversial that I say this because, you know, Whataburger, I don't know if you've been to the great nation of Texas, Peter, but Whataburger is kind of the big deal around here based in San Antonio. So there's definitely some competition with In-N-Out Burger coming to town.
Well, I'm so curious. Logan was actually just typing in my program notes that Whataburger is it not enough in Texas? I mean, I know it's a big state, Jeremiah, and I've been there and love it, but isn't it enough to have one big burger chain?
No, it's not. Everything's bigger here, so we need options down here to live.
I love it. Well, for your listeners, you know, the listeners out there, you know his voice. It's Dr. Jeremiah Johnston, who hosts a program on Saturdays here on Faith Radio. Highly recommend listening to it, where Jeremiah takes questions that might be of a troubling nature or just a curious nature that we often have for our faith. How's the show going so far? You're about a month in, right, Jeremiah?
It's been delightful. What I've been so excited about is just the engagement that we're having on the Jeremiah Johnston Show. People who are truly phoning in, texting in questions, as you say, from everywhere. But just the nature of the questions, people are finding the program, I think, to fill a need that they have in their life where we can have deep conversations about these questions that they may not feel comfortable bringing up in church, and they don't know where to find that answer in their local Christian bookstore. And so, you know, I'm learning a lot as we learn together. I'm loving it, and I'm just doing it to serve people, probably like you, Dr. Peter. I mean, I want to help people think about their faith more deeply and be more confident in their beliefs. And we're also having some delightful discussions with some of my friends who are coming on the program. It's a great mix. We have a lot of fun. There's entertaining interviews, but then we get real serious too. And it's just fun because it's neat that we can actually have this outlet for people that they can use. And then I'm excited too about all the folks that are listening through the podcast too.
Well, it's been delightful to listen to it from mine and Jeremiah.
Thank
I know
you.
I love that you do some teaching as part of the program. You have great guests. You have great questions coming in. And this is consistent with something you've been doing for a while. Prior to this show, you've done a lot of work traveling to college campuses and taking questions from students. And it must give you a sense of what the generational questions are that really are coming up among our young people.
You're exactly right, Peter. I mean, I think the job of any of us, I mean, 1 Peter 3:15 is to have an answer for the hope that's in us. That's a verse that's used so often, but I think oftentimes we also forget the first part of that verse, and that's be not afraid. You know, we shouldn't be afraid of the questions that people have about our faith. The more we know about our faith, the more comfortable we are to engage in a faith dialogue. And so I've just enjoyed the fact that really our ministry was birthed organically by just wanting to help people answer the questions they actually have today. And I think, Peter, you and I could talk about this a little bit because, you know, so often at the university level, so often at the seminary level, I feel like we're answering questions that people don't really ask anymore. And, you know, it's difficult because then we go out into the real world, and I know you specialize in practical theology, and people are having a whole different conversation out in the real world or in the church halls than what we're talking about at the seminary level. And so Where I think Christian Thinkers Society and hopefully our program, the Jeremiah Johnston Show, is helping people is actually how to answer those questions people are asking today about our faith, because that is the job of every Christian apologist, to have those conversations that are current today.
Well, and to your point, it came up just in one of my classes yesterday where we were talking about how the Bible is such an important, inspired, and inerrant document. And, of course, we lean into it as authoritative for our lives. And we believe those things, and I believe those things deeply. And then, yeah, we're talking with my students just around the idea, but the Bible doesn't necessarily tell you what you should be doing in every circumstance in your life. It doesn't tell you whether you should marry this person. It doesn't tell you whether you should attend this school, whether you should take this job. So, Jeremiah, I'd be curious your take. And if you were in my classroom, what would you tell my students about how the Bible is authoritative, but it doesn't necessarily answer maybe 99% of the scenarios presented for us each day?
Well, absolutely. First, I just appreciate the question. I appreciate the fact that people want their life to have recourse to the Bible, but I would just remind the students very respectfully, you know, the Bible's not a crystal ball. I mean, we don't shake it for every little answer that we need, but the Bible does help us learn how to think deeply, how to make decisions from a biblical worldview. If I read the Bible, if I bathe my mind truly in the library that is the Scriptures, I mean, when we talk about the Bible, we're really talking about a very carefully chosen library of books, inspired, authoritative, infallible. And when we read those books, we create what's called a biblical world and life view, which allow us to have wisdom for all those decisions that may be gray area decisions, but they certainly allow us to rightly relate to God, as you all have been talking about, the centrality of the church, but also how to rightly relate with each other and how to have wisdom for decisions. I always tell people when they ask me, Peter, the will of God for my life will always be found in the Word of God. And I cannot say that God is being silent if my Bible's closed. And so it's so important to me that I understand where wisdom comes from and the difference between knowledge and wisdom. And the Bible helps me have that wisdom. Now, that doesn't mean we don't struggle, does it? I mean, I'm going to be talking in Dallas tomorrow, or Friday rather, and I'm going to be speaking to some Christian counselors. And one of the issues is, I mean, when you read the Psalms, 30% of the Psalms are lament Psalms. I mean, God, why aren't you showing up in my life? So it doesn't mean that there's not a struggle. And yet I believe the Bible does give us the guardrails and show us the lanes to stay in to make good life decisions.
Well, if you're a regular listener of Faith Radio, you know that voice. It belongs to Dr. Jeremiah Johnston, who has a great program that airs on the weekends. Highly recommend accessing that, whether through the podcast or the live programming of it. Jeremiah, when we come back from break, I'd love to add a follow-up question to that. And I know a lot of my students will say, I have friends of mine that come and they point out seeming contradictions in the Bible. Can it really be inspired? Can it really be trustworthy when it seems to contradict itself? Does it really contradict itself? We'll ask that question next of Jeremiah Johnston here on Faith Radio Mornings. Welcome back to Faith Radio Mornings. I'm your host, Peter Kapsner, joined on the line by Dr. Jeremiah Johnston, who has a program, you know his voice here on Faith Radio, called The Jeremiah Johnston's Show, in which he addresses so many of the difficult theological, practical, biblical questions we might have. And Jeremiah, before the break, we were talking a little bit about the Scripture as this authoritative guide to our life. And I'll tell you what, having you on a Wednesday after I have to teach on Tuesday for these days, you need to come on every Wednesday and help me process what my students are asking, Jeremiah, because it's great stuff. And I'd be curious your take on this idea of the Scripture being inspired, because it comes up regularly for my students that they say, hey, friends of mine say, I can't become a Christian because the Bible contradicts itself. What would you say to that, Jeremiah?
Well, it absolutely does not contradict itself. And I want to just share this for a few moments for our audience, because I think it's important we understand how to answer this question. There are certainly differences in the Gospels. There are differences in some of the books of the Bible, and that is okay. A difference is not a contradiction by definition. And I want to give the analogy first by saying this. I shared this the other day to a group of pastors I was speaking to, and I related it to the resurrection account. So just stay with me for a moment. When we look at what happened in the assassination of Osama bin Laden, we all can remember that photo in our mind's eye when Zero Dark 30 was happening and the SEAL Team 6 was going in to take the compound. There are no less than three different SEAL Team 6 members who claim to have fired the kill shot that took out Osama bin Laden. And there's now been three different best-selling books. There are different versions of what actually happened. Now, think about this. This is happening in our modern era with all of the sophisticated technology that we have, all of the things that we have to record exactly what's happening. We still don't know exactly who fired the kill shot, and indeed three different members of the SEAL team have taken credit for it. We all know that Osama bin Laden is dead. We all know that the compound was taken, but some of the differences, there are differences in some of the details. Well, to me, that's, as a historian, as somebody that studies what happens in the past, that smacks of authenticity. If everybody was coming through with the exact same story, I would think that there was some kind of conspiracy at work. For example, Audrey and I used to live in Halifax, Nova Scotia. Halifax is famous because it's where the majority of the Titanic victims were buried. Half of the Titanic survivors say that the ship broke in half. Half of the eyewitnesses said it went down without breaking in half. So when we see this kind of the nature of testimony, the nature of social memory, there are some differences. Now, I've been in debates with Bart Ehrman and others like that who have problems believing the resurrection accounts because they say things like, well, was it one angel or two? Did Jesus rise from the dead in Jerusalem or Galilee? And we see that, well, there's differences there. Well, no, not really. Yes, there's differences, but there's not contradictions. And when I see that there are differences in the testimony and the eyewitness strands of testimony that I find in the Gospels, they're in the right place at the right time. They're early. They're based on eyewitness testimonies. And yes, there are some differences. It actually smacks of authenticity to me. If everything was airtight, if everything was exactly the same, if they were trying to kind of do what the second and third century Gospels do, kind of smooth out some of the rough edges of the Gospel accounts by making Roman generals proclaim Jesus Lord and things like that, then I would say, ooh, there's some kind of conspiracy at work here.
Well, I think it's so well put, and I think it's helpful to understand, too, that these Gospel accounts are not meant to be these historical documents. They are historical. They are factual. They did happen, but the reason why the authors put them together was to tell us some angle or lens of the life of Jesus. So Matthew being written to Jews to help them understand he really was the promised Messiah, or Luke being written to Gentiles to let them know they really were part of this sort of universal unfolding kingdom of God. And just some of the shaping of the information is still factual, but that's some of the reason for the shift.
Without a doubt, and we just have to understand that what history was in the first century minds. I mean, they were not out to write biographies, as you rightly say, as we are used to today. I said in one of my shows recently, we only have about 23 to 27 days of the life of Jesus recorded total in the Gospels, when you think about that. And then you hear the verse in John when John says, well, if we wrote down everything Jesus did, it couldn't fill the libraries of the world. Think about, we only have about 53 principal acts of Jesus in the Gospels. We don't have a single full day, by the way, in the Gospels of Jesus's life. And this man made such a massive impact. If we put it all together, maybe 23 to 27 days of Jesus's life are recorded. And it was such a game changer. And the majority of the Gospels are focused on the last 7 days, of course, of his life, leading up to the death and burial and resurrection.
Oh, super helpful, Jeremiah. We have just a couple of minutes left here. And one of the themes that seems to be emerging this week on the programming is just as we're trying to wrestle through the events in Washington, D.C. and seeing all of this rancor and power play between the Republican and Democratic Party, tough to give our allegiance to either one of those parties completely. But that's not necessarily the invitation to the believer whose allegiance is ultimately to heaven. And how do we understand being a part of the state, but maybe being separate from the state at the same time?
Well, I think we do exactly what Paul told us to do. I've actually written about this in a few places as well. I mean, the church has always been separatist. The church has always been different. It certainly was from the Roman Empire. The church was utterly different from the Roman Empire, the first 300 years of the church. And I've written about that in my Unimaginable What the World Would Be Like Without Christianity book. However, having said that, I think Paul gives us a wonderful motif when he says we're to pray for everyone in authority. And, you know, we better make sure that we're praying as much as we're complaining about those in authority. And there are certainly things to be concerned about. There are certainly things that deserve our attention. But we're praying because we know God is on the throne. And we know that the church will survive much longer than any other nation. The church is eternal, and we are part of that.
That's a great answer to the question. Thanks for that, Jeremiah. So before we wrap up our show, I got to ask you the most divisive question of the morning. It has to do with what we started with, and that's the cheeseburger conversation. If I come to Houston, Jeremiah, are you taking me to Whataburger? Or are you taking me to In-N-Out Burger? And why? Help me understand.
This is so funny. I drove my son to Waco on a Saturday for a daddy-son thing, and Waco's like, you know, 3 hours from where I live. We went to In-N-Out Burger, and we were on the way home, and he said, Dad, I think I like Whataburger better. Well, Whataburger's like one exit up from our house.
That's so great.
If my son's in charge, we're just going to go to Whataburger, Peter.
That sounds great. Well, we love your voice. We love your program.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, thanks for coming on and joining me on Faith Radio Mornings, Jeremiah.
I listen to you in the mornings on my Faith Radio app. Keep going. I just really appreciate what you're doing, Peter. And thanks so much for your love for the Lord and for just your clarity on this program to help us think through these things more deeply.
Well, it's super mutual. Really glad that you joined the program in here too, Jeremiah. We'll look forward to our next chat. We'll take a break here and we'll wrap up the first or the last part of our show here on Faith Radio Mornings. You know, I'm always mindful as I get older that God raises up people in every generation to continue the wonder and beauty and glory of his kingdom and to articulate the dimensions of it so well. And Jeremiah just represents that raising up of God that gives me such hope and such faith that this kingdom really is bigger than any of us, that it really is the one kingdom that knows no end. So appreciate his voice and the show. Appreciate you listening and look forward to catching you tomorrow on Faith Radio Mornings.
Again, thanks for listening to this podcast of Faith Radio Mornings. You can hear other podcasts at myfaithradio.com. Plus, remember, we are listener-supported, so your support makes Faith Radio Mornings and the other programs from Faith Radio possible. Make your gift at myfaithradio.com.